This is Namibia in pictures. So first of all, just to give you a little bit of perspective, the red spot on the world map is Namibia, on the upper map. There it is a little closer up, same as the one we looked at over here on the left side, in southwest Africa. Now, first of all, let's take a look at what we'll find in Namibia besides the people. Animals, a lot of animals. These are springbok, the Etosha pan. This is a warthog, beautiful little fellow. There's a beautiful game reserve. You can see all these animals in the wild. Elephants in the wild. There's the elephant that almost stepped on our car. Giraffe getting a drink, that's when he's vulnerable. That's when the lion can attack him and get him, because he looks so awkward. But if he's standing up straight, he can defend himself from a lion. He can split a lion's skull with his hooves. Zebra, thousands of zebra at the Etosha Pan, which is the game preserve in the northern part of Namibia. There's the beautiful giraffes. You can see that we're taking these pictures all from inside of an automobile. You're not supposed to get out of your car. And a whole family of elephants cavorting in the water hole. Cape Cross on the Atlantic coast, there's a place there where approximately 80,000 seals gather.
And the sound and the smell.
It's unbelievable. Else. It's unbelievable, sound and smell.
You can't stay there for too long, the smell is overpowering.
Now we're in the northern Namibia. These are huts, the kind of places in which the Ovambo people live, out in the country rather than in the city. They have individual grass huts surrounded by a fence or corral, like that. That's a homestead right there with a number of little huts inside there for a family, Ovambo family.
And this is the kitchen inside of this is what they call their home, and this is the kitchen. Kitchen does not have any kind of a shelter over the top of it, and there are not any cupboards like we're used to. This is another room inside of their home, and this one is not built out of sticks or wood, but out of stone blocks. And I guess they think it's fancier, but actually it's not as cool as the ones built out of the rocks, out of the sticks. And this is an Ovambo woman who's enjoying her pipe. And this is inside of the mother's room in the corral. She just had a baby the day before we took this picture. And when we came to their area, it's way out in the bush, she came out and welcomed us and was so hospitable. And she just had this baby a day before. And then she took us into the room where she had for her baby. And this is her. And she stepped outside of her home, which is like it's a corral. So she had a room inside of that. Very nice woman. And these are women doing their laundry. They will come to a place where there's a water pump, and so they can wash their clothes there. And they wash them and then hang them out on the line to dry, because for most of them there isn't water near where they live. And this is an outdoor marketplace where you could buy wood carvings that they do.
The Kavango people in northern Namibia are the ones that are best at doing this kind of carving. This is an interesting establishment in northern Namibia. It's called OJ's Bar, Mississippi Satisfaction. They choose some of the strangest names, but you know what's happening in there.
And one of the grocery stores, for instance, was called Sari Market. Anyway, these are Ovambo women who are weaving baskets, and they use the fronds from the palm trees, and they dry them. And then they also dye them to make different colors. And they make, these baskets are really very nice, and this is, of course, for the tourists to buy. But they use them a lot in their homes. So do I. This is a bunch of children who are getting ready for school. This is about 6 o'clock in the morning, and this is way out in the bush. They have to get water. They probably have to walk several blocks to get the water, and the women carry them on their heads. So they're very sparing with their water, and they have this one dish where everybody washes in. And we stayed overnight in their place, and they gave us a whole dish just for ourselves. Anyway, this is one of our students who's getting married. This wedding lasted an hour and a half. There was, as you say, they're dressed in Western style. It was probably like 115 or 20 in the sun. This is after the wedding ceremony. They are walking now to the bride's house, which is about a mile from the church. And the women will dance and sing in front of them and make loud noise, just sing and dance.
Play mouth organs.
Yeah. And ululate. I don't know if any of you know what that is.
You know what ululating is? They go, something like that. And they're making these noises of celebration.
Yeah. And then somebody, men are carrying an umbrella over the bride and the groom to keep them from the sun. And behind them, the men are walking and singing hymns. So it's quite a thing to see. Then we get to the bride's outside of her home. And there's this big tree, and they have a table set under the tree. And then there's another little service for 15 minutes. They're really married by the time they're finished. And then after that, everybody comes and presents their gifts and puts them on the table. And some of the gifts will be cattle, though. And they're just roaming around. Now we are inside of their home, and they put up a whole new fence so for the shade. And this was the special room, and we were invited to be in this room with the bride and the groom. And as you said, that's right, that's Coke and Sprite and the whole thing, and they're all warm. They have no way of cooling anything. I always want to give this to the Coca-Cola company for an ad, because this is way, way out in the bush. And then for the meal, we had beef, chicken, and two kinds of potato salad, and it was just heaped full on our plate. The beef was a little sandy because it was cooked on that kitchen you saw before. And then they presented to us in front of us, they put a whole chicken, and we just thought it was cooked. And we thought, can possibly eat all this? But we were supposed to take this home with us because we were honored guests at their wedding. And for this wedding, they killed 8 cows.
It's quite a, well, all the neighbors come by, you know, and they hang around and they get a little something
to eat. Yeah, they have, for their weddings, they're very, very important feasts.
This is a termite mound. You find a lot of these all over in Africa. Quite large, you can see it in reference to the fence, and it's hard like concrete. This is at the Okavango River, the border between Angola and Namibia in the north. That's the Okavango River again. Looking across, you see the country of Angola on the other side.
And if you get down too close, you also run into crocodiles?
There's crocodiles in there. But this is the border, and the Ovambo people live on both sides of this border. When they made the boundaries for African countries in Europe, they didn't pay any attention to tribal lands or anything like that. But this is the war zone, and the South African troops are often making incursions into Angola to go after the Namibian refugee camps. Now we're in the capital city of Windhoek, which is like a small town in Germany. It's the largest city of Namibia, and it's about 80,000 people. And you can, there's the white German Lutheran Church, Christuskirche there, you see in the center background. And that's the main street, Kaiserstrasse. It's called Kaiserstrasse. They use the name Kaiser in almost every of their major cities.
The tallest building is the Kalahari Sands.
No, that's an international hotel there, that tall one, that's right. And right, I know it's right above a shopping center where we used to go to get our groceries about once a month. Now there is the location area for the black people of Windhoek is Katutura. This is a kind of house they live in, Katutura, which means the place where no one wants to live. This is the cemetery in Katutura, a barren, hot place. The main church of Katutura is a large Lutheran church, and the Lutheran pastor there says that he'll have half a dozen funerals every Saturday. They usually have all their funerals gathered together on a Saturday so everyone can come. and many of these are babies. There was a SWAPO gathering or rally in Karutur behind the Lutheran Church. SWAPO is the political party of Namibia, which is recognized by the United Nations, but not recognized by South Africa. And here they said, well, this was a legal rally. For years they weren't allowed to have a rally. They said, oh, well, nobody will come. So they let them have it, and there were 10,000 people there.
And it was peaceful.
It was a peaceful rally. These are peaceful people. That's the Lutheran Church in the background, and this is part of that SWAPO rally.
This is the Namib Desert. It is the oldest desert in the world. Nothing grows on that desert. And it also has the largest sand dunes in the world. You can get some idea of them. You don't really get the idea of the heights of them, but they're really beautiful.
Really high.
And when you climb to the top of one of them and you look over all that and you just think, oh, I'm not going any further, because what if I get lost in there? And this you can't see quite so well, but this is also the dunes, and it goes right down to the Atlantic Ocean. And this was one of our favorite places to go. It's a town called Swakopmund, which means the mouth of the river, and the mouth of the river leading right into the ocean. And it's again a very German town, but everything was green, and so we really liked going here because it was green, and where we live was sort of desert.
But this is cool here. It's on the ocean because there is a cold current coming up from Antarctica called the Benguela Current. It comes right by here and keeps this place cool.
And also keeps the ocean cold, so you can't even swim in it.
This is the Waterberg Plateau. I have this picture here to remind me of the genocide that the Germans tried to perpetrate on the native peoples of Namibia at the turn of the century, where the Herero Nation was at war with them here. They had a fierce battle here. And during those years, the Herero Nation was cut from 80,000 to 20,000 people, as the German colonial troops were just wiping them out, men, women, and children. Phillips Cave, not too far from our seminary location in Ochimbingwe, out in the desert country. We show this picture because here you see some Bushman paintings, hundreds of years old. You can see the giraffe there. There are other paintings of hunters and other animals on the cave. This is the view from the cave to give you an idea of the landscape around there. It has a stark beauty about it. Another natural wonder called the Finger of God in southern Namibia. Another view at twilight. And here in the farther south in Namibia, the Fish River Canyon. This is taken in summer, which is to say in January, and is very, very hot. There are no hikers allowed to go down in there at this time of the year. It's too hot and there's no rangers to help you. That's not water down there, it's dry at this time.
We made the mistake of coming without water.
We had no water with us.
No place where you can buy a drink of water. We had to drive quite a while before we found one. This is a weavery, and for some of you who maybe gone ever into the craft room and were working on the looms, have some idea. Although this is quite different from any loom over there. But anyway, these are artists who sit at these looms and they weave their design into it like a painter would paint a picture. They have no pattern. They just weave it as they go along. And this is one of them. We had a rug, a 12 by 10 rug that they wove for us. But they also do religious motifs, and they did one for one of the churches that I really liked, and it was the Good Samaritan, and their concept of the Good Samaritan is really quite beautiful.
They used the wool of the Karakul sheep. The Karakul sheep were imported from Iran originally, Persia. And it's also from the Karakul sheep that the day-old lambs are used for the making of Persian lamb coats.
This is on the compound of this weavery. The weavery is run by a German man, and he hires the black people to do the weaving, and they come and they build their homes right on its grounds, and he provides a school for them. and the school is, the children are taught in English, and as a result, the security police like to come to his place quite regularly because they don't like him teaching English.
He's one of the more enlightened white people who really does his best to befriend the blacks and to treat them in a proper fashion.
Yeah, to encourage them to live a good life. And this is the Damara, this is near where we live. This is in Ochimbingway, and this is a riverbed, believe it or not. It hasn't rained now for probably almost 8 years, and so there's absolutely nothing growing in, I mean, there's no water in this riverbed, and there's nothing growing in it. It's just dry sand, and so they use it. This was their commemoration of their culture from the past, and they dance, and the women provide the music. These women are not dressed just for this day. This is the way they dress. This is the way the missionaries dressed them probably 100 years ago, and they still dress
Victorian in these style.
Very warm clothes. And this is a little bit of Western culture. You can't make it out too well, but it's girls in drum majorette and doing a drum majorette thing.
These are boys doing a military drill with wooden guns. Maybe they're looking to something that might happen in the future. As we said, this is the riverbed. From the northern border to the southern border of Namibia, there are no flowing rivers. They're all dry riverbeds, except perhaps seasonally. But otherwise, they're dry riverbeds. The roads go over the beds. If they happen to be flooded, then you got to drive through the flood.
But this is the only place. This is like an oasis. The water does run underneath this river, and so that's where we got the water is from the underground.
Yeah, you don't
river.
Have to go too far for a while.
And that's why the trees are green around there. And then also, this is a little bit of Western culture, and I don't know why they pick up strangest things from us, but the school put on a beauty pageant.
Not the seminary, the local school.
The local grade school. And so I and one of the women from the seminary were asked to be the judges of the pageant. And the lights go out at 11 o'clock. And so just when they were going to put the crown on this girl's head, and she was crowned the queen, the lights went out because it was 11 o'clock and everything was pitch black.
I can tell you that is total darkness, total darkness. There was a scream that arose from the crowd. This is the countryside around Ochimbingway, where the seminary is located. This is green. The rains came. There had been a drought for 7 years, and in the 8th year the rains came. That's why it's green.
Also spring.
Yeah. This is how it looked before the rains came, you see there. It's very dry, hot and dry. And this is the road into Ochimbingway. If you look closely in the very center of the picture, you can see the church tower, the village church, the Lutheran church. Well, there it is, close up. It's a historical landmark. It's the oldest church in Namibia, built in 1862, and still in use as the village church for Ochimbingway. We used to attend services there once a month, and the other Sundays we would have services in English at our seminary chapel.
The doors were coming off the hinges. They could use some of you carpenters.
Yeah, they needed some help there.
This was their main way of transportation, if they were fortunate enough to have the donkey cart. Otherwise, their main mode of transportation is their feet.
Or hitchhiking.
This is our village. This is where the people lived and how they lived. They put their houses together with whatever they could find around. Mostly corrugated metal, which you can imagine is very hot. And if there's no, I mean, it used to be like 110 or more in the shade. And you can see there's not much shade around there.
You can see that these people in the central and southern part of Namibia live in different kinds of housing than the Ovambos that you saw earlier with the...
This is a reservation, though. And this, I always call this the suburbs of Ochimbingway because these houses were just a little bit nicer than the other ones you just saw. And those people maybe would have goats too. And these are some of the children from the village who are having their pictures taken in our yard, and they're quite happy and smiling. They get people from Europe send clothes here, and so that's why they kind of clothes they're wearing. They might look a little bit dirty, but when you only get 50 gallons of water for all week to wash, cook, and wash your clothes and wash yourself and drink and water your garden or whatever, you don't wash your clothes very often.
Those buildings are part of the seminary buildings, calling them seminary.
And this is after the rain now, and you can see that there's green growing, and this is down by the riverbed, and they have dug a well there, and they have, you can't see the garden, but they have planted a garden, and then they dip the thing hanging there down into the well, and they water their garden that way. And these are the women who are going to plant a garden here. This is on the seminary grounds. And since we do have pump water and running water, they can water this garden. And so they are getting ready to start to plant a garden. You note that they are all women. I think the day when they really started working, there were two men who came out to help them. But the women do most of the agriculture.
As I said, after this, in the eighth year, finally the rains came. This is that same riverbed, and it became a raging torrent. For the first time in 50 years, the river flowed on another 150 miles all the way to the sea. And when you go to the sea there, you can see 2 miles out all this muddy water flowing into the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. There it is. We were marooned in Ochimbingwe for a time while this river was like that because the roads go across the riverbed and we couldn't get out. Of course, the children were fascinated. These children had never seen this water in the river in their lifetime. This was their first time to see all this water.
And then after the rain, the water subsides again, and probably, I think, probably in August, which would be the spring of the year, they will plant wheat. And then they will, and in November again, probably, yeah, by November, they'll pick it, because in case it should rain again, the rains come in, might start to come in November. So they really would like to have it all picked. And there you see the women are gathering the wheat and putting it into bundles and carrying it to the waiting cart, where the men will
drive the donkey cart. they get all the hard jobs.
Up to the village, where the women will thresh the wheat and then pound it into flour. And these are more children again from the village. They always like to have their pictures taken.
That's right outside our house.
And they used to like to practice their English by, you know, saying hello, how are you, and then they would get all embarrassed. And this man, Theophilus Oheb, worked for us, and he also worked for the seminary, but he was a man who did work for us. And this is a picture of taken on the day of his son's confirmation. And that's his wife and then one other daughter, and they still have another little girl, Anagreta. And his wife is an elder in the church, and she did preach in the church one Sunday, I remember. But a very nice family.
Theophilus was a gentle man and a gentleman, and he could fix anything and do anything, and he took care of us and guarded our house and did everything for us. He was really a fine person. Couldn't read or write, but he was very smart.
And this woman is sewing, and she sits on the ground, and then she uses her hand for the sewing machine. Some of them used foot pedal. I never could master that foot pedal. I always wait till the electricity went on and use my electric one. But they can do it, you know, they pump it with their hand. And she's probably mending a dress, because their dresses take so much material and they can't afford to buy material. And they'll save the oldest scraps that, I don't even know how they can sew them. They're so old. And this is a Herero boy. This is the way the Hereros will dress until they are 12 years old. And this makes much more sense because, as I say, it is very hot there.
Now, if you'll be patient, I'm going to put the next cartridge on.
Oh, I was expecting another picture. Are there any questions anybody would like to ask at this point?
Is it too dry and hot for mosquitoes?
No,
And I don't understand why. There is no water. The only thing they find decided that the mosquitoes breed in the toilets. And, because it's only, there's no water around.
This is the view from our yard. And you can see what we can see the village church from our yard. This is a corner of the, of one of the seminary buildings there, and lecturer's residence in the middle ground there. This is our house where we lived for 3 years, 1983-1986. That's the porch of our house. These are some children of the lecturers. They're playing. They like to play in the water in our yard. We had a nice hose there, and I always pose a little trivia question here. See if you can tell which of those children belongs to the German lecturer. Nobody knows, right?
And these are just two of the students' little girls, and they are just so cute. I just love those two
lovely,
little girls.
Lovely children. The Namasep children.
This is inside of our living room, and this is some of the children from the village, and I would teach them English as a second language, and we were having a birthday party. I think one of the students' birthday was the same day as mine. This is from our backyard, and it looks down to the riverbed. Usually there would be donkeys or cattle
or pigs
roaming around.
Goats.
And goats, everlasting goats. So you had to keep a fence around your yard or they would eat everything. You think the deer are bad here, the goats were worse there.
This is a view from our yard across to the seminary chapel. And that's, I guess we'll call that the academic quadrangle of our seminary. A couple of classrooms off of there, and the library, and the principal's office. And that's the front entrance of the chapel. We had some kind of an activity in the chapel every day, either a morning or an evening worship. And on Sunday, we had the regular Sunday service.
And we used the LBW?
Yeah, we used the LBW there.
Lutheran hymnbook?
Buildings that for housing the students. Each one of those buildings might have four separate rooms to it, each with its own entrance. Each student would have his or her own room. This is also part of the campus. I just took this picture because there were so many puddles and we'd never seen water like this after the rains. And a view from the tower of the chapel over the seminary grounds and the buildings. That's the dining hall in the foreground, and you can see what the countryside is like around. When I say that we were in the middle of the desert, you can understand why we say that. Might remind you a little bit of Arizona or New Mexico.
Or Nevada.
And again, the academic quadrangle, those are some of our academics crossing there. And they're looking, they're headed for my lecture hall there in the left-hand corner. I guess they want to learn how to preach a sermon. This is one of the lecture halls, students waiting for the others to arrive for the lecture to begin. The teachers or professors are called lecturers in Namibia. That's just the way they call them. They're waiting for their lecturer to start. These are some of the students posing for us. Let me see if I can.
The students were allowed to bring their families with them. And so, especially the students from the south, many of them brought their families, not so much from the north. But so that, and the church paid for the students and their families to stay at the seminary.
Four years. It's a 4-year course. We had two classes at a time, though, because we had an entering class every other year. This is one of the students. He was commissioned to run the mimeograph machine. Another student. He's a member of the Damara tribe. And here's an Ovambo student, Junius Yambo. We were out on a picnic out in the desert. He was clowning around a little bit with that silly hat. Student Andreas Shomagwe. I picture him because he was a really fine gentleman. He had been detained and arrested by the security police, and he had suffered torture. The kind where you stand in water and they prod you with electric rods. He was guilty of nothing, but they did that to him. He's a very kind person. He's an ordained pastor now. another one of our students, Juliet Manale. Lois is teaching her how to hook a rug there, it looks like. Two more of our students on the left, George there, he's what the South Africans call colored. And on the right, that's an Ovambo student, Heindongo is his name. Oh, there's Andreas Villander, he's also colored. He's at that same picnic wearing a silly hat. This is Abraham Malawa, an Ovambo student, that is from the north. These two students are Ovambo students. Mark on the left, he has five brothers, all of whom have fled the country, chased their exiles. Ignatius Ibingi on the right, he has a house up in the north, and he has a family, wife, and I think one child. Twice now it has happened that the South African army practicing nearby have dropped mortar shells through the roof of his house. Fortunately, no one was in the house at the time that this happened. And they just say, sorry, made a mistake. Barnabas Ileka, one of my Greek students, now an ordained pastor, he was a very good student. One of my favorite students. You always have a favorite, right? The students did a passion play during Holy Week one year, went around to various congregations in the southern part of Namibia, and here you can see Caiaphas and Pilate and Jesus going through the passion play. Our students like to play soccer. The seminary team is wearing the orange jerseys, and the Ochimbingwe village team is in green. So usually every Sunday afternoon, we'd have a soccer game to watch.
It's hard to watch because the dust
is
so
thick, dusty.
You can hardly see.
There's some of the kids from the village. They were watching the game until I pointed my camera at them, and then they watched me. A principal, Pastor Nathan Kapofi on the left, speaking to some of the students. This must have been, I think, after a Sunday morning service. We were standing about outside. Two of our colleagues, lecturers on the staff, Kapi Muyoro on the left, he has studied, has his master's degree from Wartburg Seminary in Dubuque. He's a member of the Herero tribe, by the way. On the right, Dr. Shavuti, who has his doctor's degree from the University of Helsinki. Dr. Shavuti speaks English, German, Finnish, Oshabambo, and Afrikaans, and probably some other language that I don't know about.
Ochi
Herrero, probably, yeah. He's a very smart gentleman. And this is another one of our professors or lecturers, Pastor Noah Beb and his family. He is now the pastor of the large church in Kagetora. When he left, I had to take over his classes. That's why I was teaching homiletics.
He also studied at Wartburg.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had his degree from Wartburg Seminary, too. This is our German colleague, Wilfred Neusel, and his wife and children. As you can see, they are celebrating Christmas. And obviously, the Christmas tree is right there behind them. We were celebrating with them.
Those children, especially the youngest one, he learned to speak, and when he learned to speak three languages at the same time. He spoke German, Afrikaans, and English, and he knew which people to speak with language to. Sometimes he mixed them all up, but all three of them could speak all three languages.
There's our total teaching staff at the seminary. On the far left is our niece, Lisa Schof, who came for one year as a Lutheran World Ministries volunteer. She taught English, and also she helped to get our library in shape. And then, of course, you see Lois on the right, and the others in between, those are all ordained pastors who are on the staff at the seminary. And that's the class of, 1985, I think. Our favorite class, and in front, the lecturers.
These are Herero women, and this is the way Herero women dress winter and summer. If you are wealthy, you would wear maybe 3, 4, 5 petticoats underneath that, and this could take up to 18 meters of material, and that's a lot of material.
to wear. You know, it weighs you down. A lot of these women get sick from wearing these clothes because the bodices fit really tight, and it's just really, really hot to wear all those clothes. And they wear the whole outfit all the time. And this is a little wood carver, and he used to carve animals for us, real primitive art, and he'd bring this animal. And I'd always try in a very nice way to ask him what the animal was that I want to install them, but it was really hard to tell what animal he had in mind when he was carving it. But he would come, and he'd always ask. He knew we had ice, and he liked to get a cold drink, so he'd always come and ask for a cold drink, and then we would always buy.
He knew we'd always buy it.
Whatever animal he had, and that, because he needed the money to live, and at least that's better than begging, because a lot of them would just come and beg. There was another lady who would weave bath mats out of the plastic bags. They have also plastic grocery bags in Namibia. She would ask you to save them, and then she would weave things out of that and come, you know, ask us to buy them.
This gentleman, however, deserved credit for the carving he did. He had cataracts.
Both eyes,
and there was no way that he could possibly afford to get them removed or that anybody would even do it. His sight was getting worse every day. He kept on carving these little animals.
We mostly talked in German to him, too.
Yeah.
This is Griselda. She's the German lecturer's wife, and she and I had a play school for the lecturer's children and the students' children and the workers of the seminary, their children. And this is her husband playing guitar. This was a special day. It was a birthday party for Johannes. And it was a school holiday, so you see all these big kids here. This was not kids we normally had come. This would be better. This was, I think, Halloween, which of course I didn't know anything about, but anyway. Had them make masks. And at the play school, it was really good because the kids had their first introduction to books or crayons or scissors or any manufactured doll of any kind, and just playing games and just showing them that we cared, you know, was really important for them. We taught everything in English, and maybe, well, Zelda's kids could speak English, and then two other kids, I think. The rest of them only spoke their native tongue, their tribal tongue.
Chirero or Nama, I guess.
Yeah.
That's our house in the background.
But we managed to get along, and this is Kuna and Johannes, and they're blowing bubbles. I always had to keep bubbles in the house because they would always come, Lois, do you have any bubbles? Or do you have any, what's the name for candy? Always wanted, you know, candy, and so
sweets.
No, it wasn't sweets. I forget. Bonbons. Do you have
bonbons?
Bonbons. And this was them playing dress up, and see, it's a bride and a groom, and they marched around the campus like this, and people stopped and sang to them and danced for them.
And
they really enjoyed it. But actually, the little girl, her name was Ndapanda. And the boy is also in the panda. And then Yona, the groom, and Johannes is the best man. But actually, Johannes and
looking
the panda,
elsewhere.
Yeah, but Johannes and the panda were really, they were an item on the campus. They always were together everywhere. One time he was supposed to take a nap, he climbed out of his window to go visit his little girlfriend.
We're up north now, in the northern church, what used to be called the Wamukavango Church, and this was an outdoor service for the ordination of candidates from our seminary. We attended that service in the north, which is what they call the operational zone or the war zone, and there were 11 candidates to be ordained. You see them lined up there to be ordained that day.
They ordained them all at once.
They're all ordained in one service, and the bishop is there to do it. The service started at 10 o'clock in the morning and lasted until 3:30 in the afternoon. There were no lunch breaks, no breaks of any kind, and those of us who were vested, we stayed that way for the whole 5.5 hours. And it was all in the language Moshabambo, except for the 5 minutes that I had here to speak.
I enjoyed that.
And there was my interpreter into Moshabambo. And by the way, this gentleman, I think his name is Nolombo, He recently studied at Luther Northwestern. Any of you here from Minneapolis, maybe they recognize him. But he's back now. He's back in Namibia now and is one of the lecturers at Otjimbingwe at Paulinum Seminary. This was one of the graduates, Jason Mbadi, whom we knew particularly well, and a very fine pastor, very conscientious in his work. There we visited him later on at his place where he is pastor now. He's the gentleman on the right. On the left is one of our students who is also now ordained. That's his church office standing behind him. He has to stoop to get in. He's a tall man. He has to stoop. I think he has to stoop all the while he's inside there. And there's the bishop, Cleopas Dumeni, the bishop of the church in the north. This is after the ordination service, and he's speaking to everyone. I always enjoy him wearing that Hamburg. But this is the bishop's church in the little area called Onipa. Some of you may have seen it if you've ever traveled to in any of these travel groups. This is the Lutheran church in Oshakati, also in the northern war zone. The inside of the church, simple, but I think simple beauty there. This is the Lutheran Onanjokwe Hospital, which is also there in the same compound where the bishop's church is, the bishop's house, and they have a library and so forth. They have perhaps 400 patients here. It's a very crowded hospital. Some patients are under the beds as well as on them. You can see the crowdedness here where you have children and adults together in one ward.
It's really true, they do have them under the beds.
Yeah. This is the operating room built in 1928. And not too modern, but they do manage to perform miracles in here. These little children have tuberculosis. And this is in the, I suppose, the pediatrics ward. Proud and lovely nurse there.
This is what they euphemistically call the hospital hotel. And just a slab of concrete with a roof over it, and people who have relatives in the hospital can stay there if they want to. And it's not really very nice, it's kind of crowded. But they can cook their meals there and everything. They do not cook the meals for the patients. Here, these two women are cooking their own supper. It's probably something like millet, some kind of a grain that they're cooking. One of the women is pregnant. She comes to this place to stay. She might come a couple of days before her time is due, because if she wants her baby to be born in the hospital, she's going to do that, because if the baby should be come at night, there is no way she can get to the hospital, because once the sun goes down, you cannot leave your house.
Curfew.
Cannot be out on the road, because if you're caught on the road, they'll shoot you.
Military curfew.
And so they have to, you know, in case anything happens at night, you get sick at night, you're out of luck.
And people do get shot this way. Bishop Dumeni's brother was shot dead just a few months back. He happened to be out, they said, at curfew time. It was actually early in the morning, and it was after sunrise. They simply shot him. He was out bringing in some cattle. He was riding a bicycle, and the soldiers shot him.
And his daughter recently died in another bomb blast that they...
Yeah, the Bishop Dumeni has suffered some very sad, a lot of sadness in his family within the past year.
And this is an outpatient ward. They might see up to 400 people in a day. So I don't know how they do it, but...
You've heard of the printing plant in northern Namibia. It has been bombed out 2 times and rebuilt. This is some of the remains of the bombing. They keep that as sort of a monument to what has happened. And an attempt was also made to bomb it again a third time, but it wasn't too serious, and they managed to make the repairs more easily. But there's their publishing house. There's where it is now, all rebuilt. In the Northern Church, the Ovambos, they print their hymnals and Bibles and devotional materials here.
They have that large high fence around it. It's a little harder to plant a bomb.
Young pastor to the youth. This is Joseph Avia talking to Lois. This is in Angela, right by the Angolan border, an establishment of the church for people with various handicaps. These people are handicapped in their hearing. You see they're welcoming us with sign language to the place. They also try to give some assistance and care for those who are mentally handicapped. That's what you're seeing in this picture. This is a church in Kavangoland, which is just next to Obamboland in the north. And my student Barnabas Haileke is pastor of that church now. It's the inside of the church. Now we're back in the central part of Namibia, the capital city of Windhoek, and the Lutheran Church in Kahutura, a large church. You can see those panels on the back wall there. Those are weavings from that weavery that we pictured before, and those weavings are picturing the parable of the sower and the seed. Each panel shows one of the different kinds of soil into which the seed fell, that you may recall from Jesus' parable. Very beautifully done. Another church in the south, this is in Rehoboth, a town where colored people live, or as they are called, Bastards. These are people of mixed black and European blood. And most of the members of this church are of that particular strain. Now we're back at our own village church in Ochimbingwe. This is the inside of the church. This is confirmation day, and there's about 70 confirmands crowded up front there around the altar. And after church, everybody's standing around and socializing, and there we are with some of the children of the parish. This is in Ochimbingwe. This is the white German Lutheran church in Windhoek, Christuskirche. This very beautiful church.
Sits high up on the hill and overlooks the whole city.
But it's kind of
really
cold.
Nice.
Now we're seeing in the nearby town of Okahanja the consecration of the bishop of the Southern Church, Bishop Frederick. Service there in May of 86. We attended that service. That was a long one too, about 5 hours long. And there's Bishop Frederick with the bishop's mitre. He's just been consecrated as bishop. Bishop Dumeni came from the north to be the officiant. And there were clergy there from all over Namibia as well as from Germany too. This is Bishop Frederick's assistant, Pastor Zephaniah Kameta, one of the most articulate and knowledgeable churchmen of the country of Namibia. Some of you may have heard him speak somewhere. He has been at Holden Village, I understand.
He was at Holden in 80...
A couple of years ago, I don't know what year.
5 or 86, because I know it was when we were there that he came here.
We were
here.
In Ochimbingwe, he came here.
So
it
was either 85 or 86.
He is also a member of the Central Committee of the SWAPO political organization. In that way stands up for his people and against the oppression that they suffer. By the way, he's albino. He's an albino. That's why he seems so light. He's a member, actually, of the Herero tribe.
Well,
how did that one get like that?
It's down under.
That's my fault. I put it in there wrong. Now, if you turn, you can see that that's a steam engine. And I'll just tell you about what that is. It's called the Martin Luther steam engine. And I'll tell you why. They got that, quite a few years back. And it was meant, I think it was in the previous century, perhaps. And it was meant for hauling things from Windhoek to the coastal town of Swakopmund. And one day it got this far outside of Swakopmund and stopped, and it wouldn't go any farther. So they call it the Martin Luther engine. Hier stehe ich, kann nicht anders tun. Here I stand, I can go no farther. Okay. And this is sunset over Ochimbingwe, over Paulinum Seminary, and that's the end of our pictures. Now, if you want to ask some questions or make some comments, you are welcome to do that.
Yes?
There was a flowering tree in one of the pictures. What kind of a tree was it?
Flowering?
It had red flowers on it.
It might have been an acacia tree.
Oh, yeah. That's
because I saw some flowers.
Flame tree, we call it sometimes.
Would it be in the same range as down in
California,
in New Zealand?
I think so.
In Australia? Uh-huh. It looked like one I had seen there.
Yes, yeah. Possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not too many of the flowering trees
that was
around.
Only when I saw.
In South Africa now, it's a different story. It's mm-hmm. beautiful trees there. That's beautiful.
All being so desert like, what percent is there?
They say that 80% of Namibia is desert.
80%?
Yeah.
Kalahari and then
most of the arable, good arable land is in the north, where there's a flowing river, a border river. And there, the agriculture is pretty good up there. But in the central and southern part, it's mostly for cattle and goats, and they got to forage and travel around quite a bit to find their food. And so they're pretty tough when you try to eat them.
Whenever there was a feast, we always had goat meat. He never liked going to the feasts because
well,
he didn't like the goat meat.
Well, they keep the goats. And they're very poor. The percentage of unemployment is estimated at around 35%. But there are mines, you see. A lot of the people are working in the mines. And there they do make some pay there, although it's very low. There's uranium and lithium and diamonds. Precious copper, tin. Important metals there. It's a rich country in that regard, and the people are working there. They're getting very poor pay, though. That's the trouble. See what else.
They eat like in our village. People would eat mealy meal, cornmeal, mush.
That was the
three
staple.
Times a day, and for some that was all they ate. For others, they might get goat meat. Once in a while, and a couple of times I used to take the deaconess around once a week and into the village to visit the people and the sick people and stuff. And I remember, you know, they said if anybody ever offers you anything to eat, you have to eat it you have to accept it because it's an insult if you don't. Even if you know it's the last thing they've got to eat, you know, it would be an insult not to take it. But a couple of times they offered me meat, and I know how they value meat because they hardly ever get meat. If they have meat, it's so, so precious to them. And one time I remember that, of course, I always sort of even hesitated eating anything from the village because I wasn't sure if I'd get hepatitis or not, but I never did. But anyway, they offered me the meat, and that one time it was really good. I really, really enjoyed it. And then another time, I went to another place and they offered me meat. They had this plate and they just turned the plate and I could take one piece off of my hand. And I was trying to pick one that I thought I would like because I don't like the innards of the animal. Well, it wasn't what I thought it was. There's a dog there. I wanted to give it to the dog so bad, but I ate it. But that was interesting to go into the village and see how, really be with the people and how poor they live.
Yes.
You mentioned the Germans and also the fact that you were over there. With all the work that's being done by Lutherans over there, coordinated and in conjunction with the Lutheran body in that country?
Well, there are two major Lutheran synods in the country, both the two black churches. The one in the north and the one in the south. Each of those two churches is indigenous. They rule themselves. They were originally started, however, by mission workers, the northern church by Finnish missionaries and the southern by Germans. Now they still get a lot of financial help from those two countries, but they are self-ruling church bodies. They are members of the Lutheran World Federation. And also, together, they with the other Christians of the country, are active in the church, Council of Churches of Namibia, with the, particularly with the Anglicans and the Catholics. Those are the other, the Lutherans are the largest body of Namibia. Then you have the Catholics, and then you have the Anglicans. And together they work together really very well in a church council.
The Catholics and the Anglicans came, I don't know how much later than the Lutherans, but they did come later than the Lutherans. And as a result, many of their churches are integrated, where the Lutheran churches are not integrated at all.
Yeah, there is a third Lutheran church. It is the German Lutheran Church, and that's all white. And that's quite small numbers, maybe 10,000 people.
And any of our students would not be welcome at that church. I mean, they would let them in, but they would not be made to feel welcome at all.
How do they finance the structure of these churches? I mean, some of them are pretty well built and nice buildings. How do they finance them?
Germany.
Well, those churches are financed by money from the Rhenish Mission Society in Germany.
Most of it.
Most of that. And in the north, they do get some help from the Finnish church, from the Church of Finland, Lutheran Church in Finland.
I think they're really trying to encourage, you know, better stewardship in among their own people, but of course they're so poor that
they're really very poor. Yes,
you know, it's really like in the village church when it, the way they did it there, when you gave your offering, everybody walked up and walked up to the altar, and you put your money into the offering basket, and then you walk back to your seat. And that took quite a long time to do that, but you know, anytime you go up there, there would only always be like pennies and nickels and dimes, maybe. Although they didn't call them nickels and dimes, but
just small coins. Anyway.
But just small coins. There's, you know, their offering, if one of us wouldn't be there, would maybe be six rands,
which is worth about $3.
Yeah.
Holden Village raised money for a well that was it. I'm not sure if I can say it right. Obongo Kabongo.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
That's right.
And that's in the north, the Obongo Kabongo Church, which is now called Evangelical Lutheran Church of Namibia. They changed the name, I guess, because we were all having so much trouble saying that. And they did do that, yes.
They also did, another time we were there, they had a project where they helped, I can't remember if they sent us sewing machines or if they helped us get sewing machines.
Yeah.
And
a further project was offerings from Holden Village came, were sent to me personally at the seminary to be used to buy books for our students.
Yes.
And so, do you recall it? And
yes.
So we were able to buy the Abingdon one volume commentary on the Bible for every student in the seminary, 35 students. It was a really good gift, and I have to tell you, the students really did appreciate it.
We did that we had a list of books for you, and then different people decided which book they would buy.
Well, that was another project. We got some, those are books that went into our library. But these were books where money was just sent to me, and I bought these books for their personal libraries, because for their, they have hardly any books at all, and they gotta have at least some basic books that they can use when they go into their ministries. So this was a really great help. It was really a great thing to do.
Books are really, really
expensive. Books are so expensive. They really are expensive. That was an expensive book. Well, I managed to get a bargain on it. I saw it around in South Africa and got a bargain on this book, but it was 80 rand, which by the exchange is about $40 for each book. Anything else? Otherwise, we're just up to 5 o'clock.